This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello. I'm just trying to catch up with the Twitter because it's very, very busy.
Yeah.
And Tracy Ferguson has said, I was speaking to my brother last night and he manages a business making industrial scales internationally and gets raw materials from overseas. So I'm assuming industrial scales are the big things.
Don't do that to me.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Doesn't work on radio though, does it?
I know.
So making industrial scales internationally and gets raw materials from overseas. Over the last 2 years, the price of a container has gone from 4.5K to 16+K. I read about this, since the start of war, steel has gone up an astronomical amount. So, And Sarah Marsh Collins, driving back from Devon, I'm sure she's a passenger, says, if only we still had a significant steelmaking industry. There you go.
Well, you know why we haven't.
Remind me.
Do you know what the basic ingredient of making steel is?
No.
Coal.
Oh, and was it Thatcher that closed the coal mines?
No, well, both parties closed those coal mines.
Remind me, it's a long time ago, wasn't it?
Well, that's immaterial. That was a long time ago. The fact is that nobody likes coal anymore because it's pure carbon. So there's a brand new coal mine in Carlisle and they won't allow it to open. But then we haven't got any coal to make steel.
Right. So there's another show for us.
Well, you know, it's like everything. You know, it's like the Extinction Rebellion mob protesting about oil. What they don't understand is what you use oil for. Yeah, they're protesting about the use of oil in vehicles.
Yeah.
But in fact, oil and petroleum are the basis of almost everything you use.
Yeah, don't put Vaseline on your lips.
Well, most of the clothes they were wearing were dependent on oil.
Mm.
Even electric vehicle batteries are dependent on oil.
Mm.
Yeah, because the anode side of a battery uses graphite, and graphite is produced from an oil refinery in Hull because it's synthetic graphite.
Mm.
Enough of that nonsense. I've got a couple of things I want to read, and then we're going to talk to Malcolm.
I'd love to talk to Malcolm.
Yeah.
And you know his mother lives in Herne Bay, right near me.
Oh, well, we knew, didn't we? That's why we invited him here, because we found out about his mum.
We love a Herne Bay person.
Yeah. There's a free social media How to Get More Clients challenge that Zoe Cairns has coming up. Our challenge takes place from the 2nd of May, and I'd love you to join me. Why not set aside some time and learn how to accelerate your digital and social media marketing in your business and create more leads by mastering key strategies and tips? This challenge will enable you to identify how to start generating more leads and increase profits in your business with your social media activities. It will teach you to stop wasting time and do the key things that will help you to social media success. Transform your strategy and learn how to make social media marketing work for you in the second part of 2022. It's set to be a really exciting week, so do book your free space. And that's the 2nd of May, and you can book by going to zcsocialmedia.com/social-media-success. That's zcsocialmedia.com/social-media-success.
Fabulous. And we had a tweet. Did you read this from Paragon Drones?
I did read that, but you can read it again.
Did you really?
Yeah, read it again.
Where was I? Hi, Paul and Jules.
Away with the fairies.
We would love a mention. I love a fairy cake. We would love a mention. They say legal and financial guests are always great sources of helpful information and insights.
Mm.
Can't wait for the banter and the music. Cheesy tunes. And they very diligently use the B-Bunker hashtag. So if you want a mention, please tweet me in the old, lovely old vanilla web and use the hashtag B-Bunker and we'll hear you.
Mm.
So you read that, did you?
Yeah, I did.
I did.
We've read it twice now.
Yeah, and did you read the What's On in Kent one?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm redundant now. I could just loll here and eat ginger.
You could just listen to me.
Yeah.
But that would be
sometimes, novel. Well, sometimes I'm reading things, you see, while you're...
Yeah, I know.
Chatting.
Yeah, and you're chatting to people.
Yeah, I mean, it's full on,
nothing
isn't it?
To do with the show. You're talking about recipes and stuff, aren't you?
Yeah, hog it.
Mm. Tackling skill shortages. This is an event taking place with Canterbury Christchurch University on Wednesday the 4th of May. an interactive in-person event to hear more about the Canterbury Christchurch University's GradForce scheme, matching final year students with SMEs. If you want to find out more, go to campusinsradio.co.uk/FSB, and it's taking place on Wednesday the 4th of May, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. There you go. Do you know what, though?
Yes, we're going to speak to someone.
I think we'll talk to our next guest, don't you?
Yes.
I think that will be best.
I think we need to get some information from Malcolm.
We do. It's a pleasure to welcome onto the show for the very first time, Malcolm Palmer of A4G Chartered Accountants. Malcolm, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. You've had a bit of a trek to get over here because you came on a choo-choo train, didn't you?
Yeah, not too bad. Jumped on Ebbsfleet, got off at Ashford.
Because you live in the Ebbsfleet area, do you not? Or you based there?
About 10 minutes away. So.
Cool. Well, thank you for joining us and making the effort to do that. I know that you're a very, very busy man and you've got lots of things going on in your life, not least of which a broken down car.
No, just getting service today.
Oh, right, okay.
My garage really annoyed me because I took it in the other day for its MOT, and before they've always done the service and the MOT together, and this time they haven't, and it's just flashed up. It's really annoying because I've got to do it all again, take it in, and then be on Shanks's pony.
You haven't run out of our blue again, have you?
No, I just know a man to ask when I do.
Yeah. Okay. Malcolm, why don't you kick off by telling the listener, and we've only got one, the listener about Malcolm, about you, and then about your business, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, so me, as you said, I'm from Herne Bay, qualified as a chartered accountant in 1990.
Wow.
Believe it or not, I know I don't look old enough for that, but I took over a practice, an existing practice, in 1996. It was a really old-fashioned little firm.
Can I just ask, because I'm fascinated by these journeys and how you do it. You know, it's kind of good. Oh, I just kind of walked in and took over. Were you working there? Was it like a management buyout?
Just got approached by a solicitor because the guy who'd been running this practice for 26 years had just passed away.
Oh, well,
he'd been ill for a year with cancer, and the staff had almost covered it up from the clients that how ill he was. So they had to do a deal to sell the practice, otherwise there wouldn't be any practice to sell. You know, all the clients would have just evaporated. So it was an interesting year. He didn't believe in computers. This is 1996, not 1896.
So did he have an abacus and a little hammer
pretty
and chisel?
Much, sort of? Yeah, not quite an abacus, but there was a big sort of row of these sort of hard-backed ledgers.
Lovely. I've been there as well. Many years ago, back in the 1980s, I was hired as interim managing director of Morgan Grenfell Merchant Bank. And it was like working. What was that bank in Harry Potter? It was like that. It was Hogwarts Bank. It was So I feel for you. Yeah.
Well, we were over the top of a hairdresser's.
Right.
And Tuesday.
That's
morning,
handy.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. Tuesday morning was half price for pensioners' day. So sort of slowly over the course of the day, our office sort of. The smell of perming lotion would sort of slowly permeate all the way up. We sort of ran out of space there pretty soon, and we moved to another little office.
Where's this office?
Just over the road at the time. But the next move was the interesting one because I was really struggling to find somewhere, and it was Greenbelt, and we didn't want to move too far away. And I kept driving past this old derelict building on the A20 in West Kingsdown. So I made a few inquiries and found out that it was owned by this family who had in the 60s and 70s had run it as a biker's calf. And it was legendary.
Halfway calf.
It was called Johnson's calf.
Johnson's calf. Yes.
Did you used to go there?
I did, and I'll tell you something else.
You weren't a biker?
I was. I certainly was.
Rocker.
Yeah.
If he was a mod, he wouldn't have been a baddie.
I remember being there and watching a rock and roll band called the Wild Angels, at Johnson's Calf. And the lead singer was a guy called, what was his first name now? I can't remember. Gray. Anyway, fast forward 30 years, and the radio station used to be based on Romney Marsh, And he lived in New Romney, and he turned up at a radio station to ask if he could do a show. Yeah, what on earth was his first name? Can't remember. Anyway, so you bought the old Johnson's Caff.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
So we did we did our open day. Mm. I mean, this was great for an accountant, okay? Because we decided we'd do it on the theme of the Bikers Cafe, because that was its history.
That's so lovely.
Which we got the local classic bike club came in and met a guy who did all these pictures of all the old bikes. And the great thing was that for the catering, we just did bacon butties and mugs of tea, which really appealed to my inner accountant on the budget. And, so it's quite a good history to the building.
It's just so good as well to actually, I'm a real fan of buying your premises rather than renting.
Yeah.
And, you know, you own it now, and that's great.
Yeah.
What about staff?
We've got across different locations, we're up to, I think, 65 people now.
Huge.
So we've sort of had, we've never had a year where we didn't grow. And obviously that requires two things. You've got to increase the client base, but you've also got to increase the staff. And the very first year that I took over, we took on a new trainee. And that was the start of an annual exercise. And we now, these days, we normally take four trainees on every year.
Right. Okay.
Pretty much all straight out of school rather than university.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's one of the things that I've talked about over the last few years. And accountancy is one of those professions where even if you do go to university, when you go into practice, you have to do your accountancy exams anyway. So my point has always been, why run up a debt going to university? Why not go straight into doing your accountancy exams?
Yeah. Well, two of my colleagues, I believe, have already been on your show a couple of months ago, Emma and Charlotte. So Emma joined the summer that we bought the old Johnson's Cafe in 1999. She's now deputy managing partner. Charlotte joined in, I believe it was 2008. And so they were both 18-year-olds. And I think the 18-year-olds, I know we're getting a little bit off topic here.
No, that's fine. I'm good with 18-year-olds.
Yeah, but it's interesting because the schools seem to judge themselves at sixth form level by the percentage of people that go to university.
Yeah, yeah.
But which means that somebody going and getting a job training as a chartered accountant is deemed to be a failure on the school side.
Which is very sad,
isn't it? Yeah. So, you know, by the age of 21, both Emma and Charlotte and, you know, a lot of our others that have come through that route, they've got a professional qualification under their belt. We put them through something called the Accounting Technicians Exams, which is sort of almost a halfway to being qualified. But you've got letters after your name. And then as a result of passing those exams, they get exemptions for the chartered or certified exams. And then potentially they could be, you know, a fully qualified chartered or certified accountant by the age of 24.
Excellent.
Yeah. You know,
and perhaps earlier. Now,
Better way to learn than with your feet on the ground and with someone actually doing it?
Yeah, yeah. 21 with 3 years good work experience under their belt.
Absolutely.
Is invaluable, you know.
Yeah.
And we've got a few of those now, you know, who are on that journey.
Mm. Yeah. So how many people have you got working for you now?
I think we're 65
in
total.
Okay.
Yeah.
All in the same.
Not all in the CAF building. No. We sort of ran out of space eventually.
We've got
another back office, if you like, sort of a few miles away.
Okay.
But we call that the client-facing office now. So the staff that tend to meet the clients, they're based there, and you know, that's the one with all the meeting rooms, etc. So.
Yeah.
Good little location. It's on the A20. Everyone finds it.
Well, you got that nice straight road because Johnson's Caff was famous in the 50s for having
bacon sandwiches.
No. It's a straight mile, and it's if you could get up to 100 mile an hour on a clapped out old Norton or whatever back in those days, it was the original ton up club was along that straight mile of road.
Well, the story is that you had to put. Tell Laura I love her on the jukebox and get up to the roundabout and back before it finished. And then you got breakfast for free.
Yeah, yeah.
And now there's a little bit of road that it was renamed Death Hill.
Death Hill,
Of the number of motorbikers that came to grief there. So.
Have you got any outside space with it?
Any outside space
with your office?
Nice big car park.
Okay.
So it's in a fantastic location on the A20, just before you get the Brands Hatch.
I bet there's still a little whiff of bacon.
Oh, of course there is. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's better than Permian fluid, isn't it?
Yeah, it's much better.
Yeah, just round the corner from the London Golf Club, which is favourite for the Ryder Cup in 2031. So. Yeah.
So, I asked our guest this last week, but what's your top tip for someone starting a new business?
Top tip for someone starting a new business. That's sort of the subject of my book, really. I mean, I think.
See, that's a nice segue. Yeah. See, this show is produced to within an inch of its life,
in?
Malcolm.
Yes, it has. Hold it up.
Well, let's talk about it.
So all the radio listeners can hear it.
Yeah, we've got Malcolm's written a book. What's it called?
The Accidental Millionaire.
Okay. So what inspired you to write it?
Big things, really. So, back when I started my business, I remember sitting in my garden reading a business book, and it said that every successful business should have a unique selling point.
Right.
And I had to sort of think to myself, you know, what is ours? You know, there was much bigger firms just down the road, more, you know, technical skills than us. There was smaller firms that would be a bit cheaper. Mm. But we were doing pretty well at the time. And I thought that the thing that we were really good at was communication. Mm. And that was the reason we were getting these new clients to come to us. So I think because of that, we are, you know, if you want a sophisticated accountant who can answer questions about this, that and everything else, you know, there's a lot of them out there. But if you want somebody that can explain it to you in language that you understand,
that doesn't make
then
you
there's not
off.
Quite so many, you know. And so we've got, probably like any accountancy practice, we've got our share of, a lot of guys that have come off the tools, you know, they just started out. But very often with no sort of business plan or strategy or even big ambitions at all, you know, they just sort of went to work for a friend of their dad's or went to work at the same place that one of their mates went to work or, you know, just took the first thing that came. But over time, they start to become good at whatever it was they did. And, interestingly, I mean, many of my clients that have been really successful have got virtually no exam passes whatsoever.
Yeah,
So they started to be good at whatever it was that they did. And that's probably the first tip, you know. You need to do something you're good at. You've got to at least be better than average at whatever it is. And become good at it, they then start to become frustrated with the person that they were working for. You know, that actually, you know, you get that moment when I remember somebody, an old boss said to me that passing your exams is just the start of the journey. And but that seemed to be his justification for telling me I was wrong about something. And to this day, I still know I was right about what it was that I'm talking about. And they get that moment when they decide, you know, it's time for me to go out on my own.
Yeah.
And and often they get one customer and they're up and running.
Yep.
And the journey from then, you know, the accidental millionaire's journey is that some of these people just seem to know to do the right thing day in, day out. Mm. And 15, 20 years down the line, all of a sudden they just realise they're actually quite wealthy. They're actually millionaires. Yeah. You know, they have a meeting with a financial advisor that their accountant has steered them towards, who just sort of adds everything up. And it can come as a bit of surprise to some people that they didn't have that big plan or direction, but they did the right thing day in, day out. So the book is very much about, if you haven't got that natural instinct, and you want to shorten the journey, because a lot of those people will tell you that they made a huge number of mistakes along the
way.
There was lots of time they were going backward before they went forwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and if you can learn from other people's mistakes, you can shorten that journey.
Yeah. Failure is a prerequisite, as far as I'm concerned.
It's cheaper if it's someone else's failure.
It is, yeah. If you can learn from somebody else's failure, it's brilliant. But so many of us learn from our own failures as well. You're absolutely right. It never ceases to fascinate me that you tend to kind of get, and this is a bit loose, but two types of people in business. You get people that are professionals, or, you know, whether they're tradespeople or whether, but people who know their business, yeah. They have a skill set that they want to take to working for themselves, yeah. And then you have a much smaller subset of people that are just entrepreneurs that go, well, I know, I'll just do that or that or that or that, where they might not have any expertise at all. By far the biggest pool are the people that have expertise. But one of the interesting things about that group of people, from my perspective and my experience, is that so many of them, when they start off, they're really good at what they do, but they don't really know how to run a business.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's where someone like you comes along, because if they learn, and I have this argument with people so often, I used to operate as an angel investor, investing in startup businesses, and it used to drive me bonkers where people would try to save money in the wrong place at startup time. Yeah, well, we'll get accountants later, we'll get insurance later, we'll do a shareholders agreement later. No, they're all basic things that you need to get right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so you saw this thing and you decided to write a book about it.
Kind of.
Go on then.
I'd always talked about what I called the accidental millionaires on our client base. Mm. And it was, you know, most of our business clients, we have this meeting with them once a year. We're trying to have it 5 or 6 weeks before the end of the year, which is not the way most accountants do it. Mm. But if you want to do a bit of tax planning, you need to do stuff before the year's passed.
Yeah.
If you want to change some reporting function, you want to do it before the new year has begun. So we try and see our clients before the end of the year. So, you know, you get to know their journeys. And some of our clients, you know, it's just this slow evolution over time. Others, you know, each year, each meeting that I have with them is completely different to the year before. Mm. So, you know, I can see all the things that people get right. I can see all the things that people get wrong. I've got loads of anecdotes. I've changed all the names in the book, by the way, but there might be one or two of my
clients that recognize themselves in
the book. And I'd sort of talk to my team about accidental millionaires. And then when the pandemic hit, I just felt that we as a firm were just a few weeks ahead of what was happening. And we, from, I don't know if you remember, March the 23rd was the day that everyone went into lockdown. Mm. Well, we'd been sending out nightly emails, including weekends, from the 13th of March, so 10 days before that.
Right.
And because, you know, our clients were really worried about what was happening,
of course,
the impact on them.
Yeah.
You know, some of them just having contracts cancelled left, right and centre. Mm. So we were getting stuff out about all the stuff that you had on the news, furloughing and bounce back loans, but also lots of business advice. And on a Friday night, my marketing lady let me go a bit rogue with our emails, and I was just trying to do these thought provoking emails and just give people a little bit more advice, rounded, you know, bigger picture sort of stuff. So we had a few themes that we did. And at the same time, one of a good friend of mine is Steve Backley, who older sports fans will know, used to lob a spear,
javelin lobber.
And Roger Black and Steve and Roger have got been in business together for about 15 years now, and they do loads of motivational speaking. Yep. And it's fascinating to listen to both of them. I've learnt tons off of them. So of course, whilst we as a business got ridiculously busy when the pandemic hit, just helping as many people as possible, for Steve and Roger, they've actually had nothing to do. And and the two of them are used to being really active. They were crawling the walls, really. So they made a decision to put together a thing they called the Mindsetting Program. And it was all of the things that that they do with the companies that they work with, all about the 20 key steps to being able to progress your career, you know.
Right.
And a lot of the people they're working with are employees of big corporate organizations.
Yeah.
So they put the Mindsetting Program together, and we looked at it and thought, well, this is great. We got a few of our team on it that were at that stage of their career when they needed a little bit of a boost. And then as I looked at it, I thought, do you know what? These 20 qualities that they're talking about on their on the mindset program. These are the same 20 qualities that my accidental millionaires have got. So my Friday night emails that I was getting out, I decided I was going to do it on the theme of their of the my or each of those different issues.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And make it quite topical as well. And having finished it all, we were out on the golf course one day, and I said to Steve, "So what do you think about turning that into a book?" And here we are.
Right. Okay. So when was the book published?
The book was published about 4 weeks ago.
Wow. So hot off the press.
Who's published it?
We self-published it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Was that a minefield or was it quite easy?
No, I used a really good company. They just paid them some money. They organised everything. So
wow.
They did all the proofing and the legal stuff.
It's funny because we've used some of the top publishers such as Wiley and other ones. And when I proofread what they'd proofread, they'd farmed it out to India. And it was pidgin they'd allowed, you know.
Oh, really?
It was really bad. So you've done really well to find a company that do it properly.
I'm a pedantic accountant to start with. I've got a cousin in Canada who's just retired, who's another pedantic accountant. So he did my first proofread, and then they did the the second proofread.
Cool.
But, yeah, I'll be disappointed if there's any pidgin English. Yes.
The Accidental Millionaire is the title of the book.
No, Accidental Millionaires.
Accidental Millionaires, yeah.
There is another book with a similar title, which is a humorous book, shall we say? So
right.
Don't confuse that. But the subtitle of it is The Secret Mindset That Successful Business Owners Share with Sporting Legends.
Okay, where can you buy the book?
On Amazon.
Okay,
just,
cool. And is it under your name?
It's under my name,
Malcolm Palmer.
Just type in Malcolm Palmer. So my book will come up top. There's another book by somebody called Malcolm Palmer about bird watching in northern Spain, which is
which would be fabulous as well.
Yeah, you can buy both. Know.
But it's definitely not me. And just
fantastic. Did you enjoy the process of writing the book?
Yeah, I loved it actually. Yeah, I really enjoyed So it's two stages, really. I mean, first of all, I was writing the Friday night emails, and then, you know, there was an article a week, and each of those articles has become a chapter. But actually, of course, when you just glue all that stuff together, it doesn't make a
book. Well,
You've got to make it flow. And it's when we did the emails, I did little 5 minute videos with Steve and Roger.
Right.
So all of their thoughts are interspersed within that. So
cool.
I've sort of wrapped my. You know, there's a lot of real world stuff in there that I think people relate to, and I'd like to think it's quite humorous as well.
So you've now published. It's going to go to the top of the bestseller lists, we're sure.
In about 10 years.
Have you got the bug now? Are you going to write again? Do you think?
Yeah, I've got. I won't say it on air, but I started two other books, funnily enough, and I just ran out of steam with them. And it was only when I was thinking about this, about writing this book, that I realised there's a natural, logical order to four books that I've got in my head. So my plan is one every couple of years.
Okay.
So the next one will be about the. So this is very much about the person. It's very much about the mindset of the person that's going to be running that business. Whereas the next one is going to be very much about what the key ingredients are for a successful business.
Sounds like a gremlin on the roof.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Whoever that was. Yeah.
Somebody tap dancing.
Yeah.
It is a live show, of course, Malcolm. In a minute, he'll abseil through. That's when it gets really exciting.
So you've got this other book planned in your head, at least.
Yep.
So we can expect to see that sometime in a couple of years as well.
Cool. You've got the writing bug then.
Yeah. Malcolm, if people want to find out more about you, what you do and your firm, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so our accountancy practice is called A4G,
yep.
And which was just a short version of Accountants of Growth. But we're A4G. Mm-hmm. So our website is www.a4g-llp.co.uk. We're probably a little bit different to some of the other firms. We do all the stuff that most accountants do, all the stuff you have to have done. But the main reason people come to us is for the advice. that that they get on whatever that's on, whether that's about growing their business or reducing their tax bill, having a wealth planning strategy, digging them out of the soft and smelly stuff that they find themselves in from time to time. You know, that's normally the reason that people will come to our firm.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. It's been a pleasure to talk to you about it. Now, I want to talk to you about something else as well, because I know that you've been up to something just recently. So why don't you tell us completely nothing to do with accounting whatsoever or accidental millionaires or anything like that. Well, I suppose there might be some. Anyway, why don't you tell us what you've been up to just recently?
Yeah, so I guess I had my, like a few people really, I guess I had my sort of Bob Geldof moment, you know, when I saw some of the refugees from Ukraine coming through the airport in Berlin, people holding up signs, you know, family of three or whatever. And we just seem to be a bit slow as a country to welcome some of these people.
To react to that, absolutely.
Well, there were people offering homes who didn't hear anything.
Yeah. No.
Didn't get any refugees. Well, haven't got them.
I mean, I could talk to you for ages about, you know, how difficult it's been made for people to come to this country. But so with one or two other people, what we decided to do was that we'd get a coach, hire a coach, and we'd take the coach out to Ukraine, fill it up with supplies, drop off all the supplies, and then bring back 57 refugees.
Wow.
So the idea was to do that in the Easter holidays.
How many does it seat? 57, did you say?
57, yeah. So the idea was we'd do that in the Easter holidays because the coach industry has a little bit of a hiatus. A lot of them do school trips and you know, there's a lot of coaches available.
So they're not so busy over Easter holidays?
Not so busy over Easter holidays, but of course once the schools go back, it also the weather's starting to get a little bit better. And so we had our coach all planned, but we only had a handful of people that were going to be on it because there wasn't enough people got visas. So we
you got out there?
No, we had it all planned, ready to go. All the supplies, which are in my office at the moment.
Right. So what you're saying that you didn't have them to come back for the return journey?
Just literally a handful of people that wanted to come back because everybody's waiting for visas to come through. Now, that's
and it must be so hard to apply for a visa if you're being bombed and running around. You're not even near Wi-Fi, presumably. And how do you apply for a visa? I have no idea.
Or have forms in a foreign language.
Yeah.
Or have to find somebody in the UK. Because to apply for a visa, you had to have been connected up to a sponsor in the UK.
But that's what I mean. You've got to have Wi-Fi. And I'm sure if buildings are being bombed, you don't have Wi-Fi easily.
Absolutely. So, but the visa situation has suddenly started to resolve itself. And and now the obvious thing that was going to happen is now happening, which is that the people are getting visas, but they've got to get here. And it's still quite dangerous. You know, there's lots of traffickers.
Must be terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you imagine, you know, you've got a young woman with
two small children. Yeah. And then the men often stay behind to fight.
Well, exactly. Yeah,
and then you've probably got
men coming to the UK,
and you've got all your domestic stuff. So you've got, you know, cats, dogs, budgies, whatever. Yeah. You know, awful, terrifying.
Absolutely, and then worst of all, you've got to try and negotiate the Ryanair checking in process. You know,
which we saw what happened to the British people trying to get out for Easter holidays. They were, what was it, four or five? They were actually telling someone. I said to my new husband, they were asking people, the airline, to bring a chair with them. Because of the long wait. I said to Gav, how are you going to pack a chair to sit on? It's just ridiculous.
It's mad, isn't it?
So if we couldn't cope with travelling, how are we going to let foreign people come in?
Yeah.
You know, who have probably got nothing except their, hopefully, a passport.
Well, most of them have got one big bag, you know, one giant suitcase with as much of their valuable possessions as they could get in, really.
So you gave up this journey. You haven't done it yet.
No, we've rescheduled it.
Right.
We're now flipping it round. So on the 28th of April, we have a coach with a Polish coach company, which is going to leave Warsaw. The demand has, over the last few days, has just gone through the roof on it. So we had 380 inquiries for seats, and that's trebled in the last few days. We've still got 10 days to go. It's got a huge amount of traction.
So this is one coach, 57 people.
At the moment,
it's
one coach. And then that will come back to a place called Hartley Country Club which is near Longfield, near where I live, and the staff there have said that, you know, they'll be in any time of the day or night to, you know, cook a hot meal for the people, and then the sponsors of those people will meet there and will take those people back to their homes. And then the following morning, the coach will then pick up all the supplies at our offices and will then drive back to Warsaw, and there's a sports stadium in Warsaw where it'll drop them off. What we want to do, though, is...
So hang on, if the provisions go to Warsaw, how are you going to get them into Ukraine for the people?
That side of things is very well organised.
Okay,
there.
So this
sports stadium, which I think it's GoSir, but it's one of the big sports stadiums out there. So, I mean, that's like a whole, almost military operation now. So a lot of the stuff that's going there will actually be going into Ukraine. Some of it will be going to the refugee camps.
And what kind of things are you sending over?
Well, it's changing all the time, but, you know, the one thing that they don't seem to need is clothes. You know, it's almost a giant jumble sale out there at the moment. But the sort of stuff that people will need is sleeping bags, pillows, thick socks. You know, thick socks are going into Ukraine for a lot of the guys that are in there. You know, these are people that might have been working as lawyers one day and are in the army the following week, you know, so they're not necessarily got all the things that they need.
They're not necessarily hardy.
No, absolutely.
And what's the weather like there at the moment? I've no idea. Do you know?
Well, it's on the turn. It's if you follow what's going on, Ukraine has a mud season. And it's mud season at the moment.
Right.
It's heavy rain that churns everything to mud. So
you're thinking about trench foot then, almost?
Possibly.
So you need clean socks, clean boots, comfortable boots as well.
But if you talk to the, there's a young lad that we've spoken to who's been out helping at one of the refugee camps, and they're called Finn Watt. And, there's some really good small little organisations that... helping out there. It doesn't take a lot of research to find out the things they need.
And there's, of course, if women are fleeing, you've got to think about sanitary products. You know, they're not going to have packets and packets with them. Then medication, of course, a lot of people are on medication. And I guess people are getting sick if they're, ill, if they're marching in the cold and wet without any.
Yeah, we've got quite a lot of medical kits that are going.
And even plasters. If you think, when you go hiking or walking long distance, you always get a blister, don't you? This is amazing what you're doing.
So what we'd really like to do is to raise. So the first trip's all paid for. So my clients and my practice, we've paid for the coach and all of the supplies. So that's all full up. We've got money towards the second trip. But what we would like is to get some more corporate sponsors on board that will pay towards the cost of the coach. And then we'd like to find organisations in different parts of the country to us. Something could be other parts of Kent, but could be anywhere really.
Yeah.
That will sort of use our trip as the prototype. So what you need is you need somewhere for the coach to come back to.
Yep.
You know, somewhere
a base.
I've got a friend of mine who was involved with the Scouts, and he's talking to the Scouts organisations because most towns have got a scout hall and it tends to have a car park, and lots of willing volunteers. And then you need somewhere the following day where, all of the supplies can have been delivered to that will pick them up. But, there's going to be thousands of people that need to get here. And that's secure transport. The organisations that are helping the refugees, that's the big thing that they're really worried about. You can't just send people out, on their own off to the airport and just hope everything will be okay. So this gets people back safely.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. If people want to get involved with this, corporates or whatever listening, is there a way they can do that? Just get in touch with you or...
Anybody that would like to sponsor this through their company, if they want to get in touch with me, so malcolm@a4g-llp.co.uk. We've got a small website that we've set up called coaches2ukraine.org with number two in the middle. We're on Facebook as well.
Is it on Facebook?
Yeah, we've got a page on Facebook.
So do you know what it's called?
Coaches to Ukraine.
And your website was?
Coaches2ukraine.org. It's the number two in the middle.
We will put those links on the radio website so people can find them. Malcolm, that's fantastic. We wish you much success with that, and the book, and the accountancy firm, and your ton-up stuff from Johnson's Cafe, and everything else. Mel Gray was the person I was trying to think of earlier. It just came to me. But for the moment, Malcolm, thank you so much for that. Really fascinating, and we wish you much and continued success.
Brilliant. Many thanks for letting me have this opportunity to speak on your show. It's been a pleasure.
It's an absolute pleasure.
I think
it's
what you're doing
pleasure.
Is amazing, you know, because there's thinkers and there's doers. And
That's the thing, isn't it? And really, there's a theme through everything Malcolm has done here, that he's one of life's doers.
Yeah, exactly.
And takers.
What's your star sign?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Oh, here we go. I'm a Capricorn.
Oh, well, yes.
She knew that, but she never told you beforehand. No. She,
What's that line? I don't believe in any of that stuff, but that's just typical of us Capricorns.
Exactly. Absolutely. She's two-faced.
Yeah, I'm a Gemini.
She's a Gemini. She's two-faced.
And he's a Leo.
Yeah. I'm a typical Leo.
Yeah.
I don't believe any of it.
He's got the lion's mane. I think it's amazing, and if you keep us informed, we'll keep tweeting it out. And it would be lovely to hear some of the stories of the Ukraine people that you bring back as well. Where they go and who looks after them. Because, I mean, I guess not all of them will stay in Kent. They'll go to lovely villages up north, and also they'll spread out, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because unusually, as a group of refugees, they didn't intend to come here in the first place.
And they're all really skilled, which is brilliant.
No, but they're not looking to become economically active necessarily. They're just trying to get away from getting killed. Which, you know, I'm sure that the vast majority of them would like to go home.
Well, of course.
Eventually.
And but when?
And rebuild their lives, you know. So, you know, it's okay, all of us going, oh, you know, there's going to be lots of skilled people, which there will, but, you know, most of them probably aren't coming here to work. They're coming here as a temporary respite, hopefully, to be able to go home sometime fairly soon and rebuild their country.
Well, if somebody pops off Putin, then perhaps they can go home.
Fingers crossed.
It's being very slow, isn't it?
Well, he's jailed them all, hasn't he? That's why. They've all been arrested. Who knows? I've read some fascinating stuff because as Westerners, as liberal Westerners, we don't really understand the whole Russian psyche behind this. And I read a couple of things that some Russians wrote that says, you know, you have to understand our country. When you think Russia has never had democracy at any level in the last 1,000 years, so it's not something they're used to.
No.
You know, and we find it amazing that someone like Putin can get away with what he gets away with. But if you've never had any kind of democracy, it's not something you're missing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's sort of, I don't know if you've read about this talk, but if you compare the way that business developed in China to the way it developed in Russia. So what happened in China was that they came up with this idea that they'd give the person that ran the factory, you know, he had his quotas that he had to make for the state. And then they just said, but if you make more than that, you can sell it on the, privately.
Yeah.
So it sort of incentivized these people to, you know, sort of locked in this, still they've got this government driven economy, and then you've got all these entrepreneurs springing up. But what happened in Russia was that they were so frightened that the communists would get back in again that they basically gave the whole Russian industry to all of these oligarchs, or they loaned them the money to buy it, which, you know, they could repay back within about 12 months because the profits of these industries.
Yeah.
So you know, you've got two completely different economies that sprang from similar systems, but just by one decision being made differently, that's what's happened. And the Russian people have remained in the same sort of levels of poverty and lifestyle from before communism, really.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what a lot of commentators are saying, is that, you know, there's nothing in it for them. You know, the average Russian, there's nothing, you know, getting rid of Putin and getting somebody similar is just, well, who cares? Yeah, it's not going to change their lifestyle a whole lot because they haven't got anything anyway. You know, and opening a McDonald's in central Moscow really wasn't doing it for them. Interesting stuff. We're fast approaching the end of the show. We've got loads of stuff that we still haven't covered. The Construction Expo is taking place on the 22nd of September. This is the Southeast Construction Expo. It's happening at the K2 Centre in Crawley, and it's the place to meet loads of construction professionals from the Southeast, London, and the wider UK. 87% of business directors agree it's easier to communicate face-to-face than by phone, email, or Zoom. So if you want to find out more, go to their website. You can book a free ticket to attend there as well. It's www.constructionexpouk.co.uk. That's constructionexpouk.co.uk.
The Chief Executive and Director of Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce is to be the keynote speaker at the May of this year meeting of Make It Your Business, which is based in Tunbridge Wells. It'll aim to encourage more women to start their own businesses. Jo James, OBE, has since taken over the leadership of the Chamber and has established it as the leading business support organisation within the county. And she'll share her business story at the event, which is on Friday the 13th of May. It's at the Finance Hub on the Pantiles, so that's Tunbridge Wells. There'll be four inspiring Tunbridge Wells entrepreneurs who will also share their business journeys, with the event being chaired by Make It Your Business Tunbridge Wells local champion Siobhan Sterling, who's the director of marketing and PR agency Sharp Minds. Make It Your Business Tunbridge Wales runs from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on the 13th of April, as I said, which is a Friday. And it's sponsored by the Finance Hub in the 1887 building at the end of the Pantiles. And you can go on to kentbusinessradio.co.uk to order your ticket. There will be a little link for you to click through.
There's an ethnic minority-led business networking group. And the next event is taking place on Thursday the 28th of April, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. On the last Thursday of each month, we invite you to our free-to-attend national networking event for ethnic minority, FSB members and non-members. Join us to network, share, learn and discuss the successes and experiences of being an ethnic minority business owner. It's hosted by Jason Roberts, who's the founder and CEO of Kalida International. If you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB, you can find the details there and book your free ticket.
And Kent-based IT support providers, Infotech Solutions UK, have completed the final stages of its integration with Air IT.
Do you want to borrow my teeth?
Integration with Air IT following its acquisition, which was announced in March of this of last year. This sees the retirement of its former name and branding. Air IT is a leading supplier of managed IT and communication services and also provides innovative cloud transformation, cybersecurity and business intelligence solutions to SMEs in the UK. So well done, guys. That sounds great. New branding for Air IT, solidifying its expansion into Kent.
Fantastic. It's back, the Kent and Medway Business Summit. It returns on Wednesday the 27th of April in the stunning Sibson Building on the Canterbury campus of the University of Kent. Bringing together some 300 businesses, key policymakers and leading academics, the fifth annual summit will focus on business opportunity and sustainability, featuring the latest news from key projects and expert keynote speakers. Alongside the keynote speeches, collaborative workshops will facilitate debate on topics including productivity, placemaking and skills. So far, the confirmed speakers include Kitty Usher, who's the Chief Economist at the Institute of Directors, Councillor Roger Goff, who's the leader of Kent County Council, Richard Hicks, who's Director of Place and Deputy Chief Executive of Medway Council, Andy Martin, who's Director of Communications and Strategy, the London Resort Company Holdings. The workshop contributors include Emma Wilcox, who's the Project Director for Creative Estuary, Simon Story, who's the Chief Executive of the Kent Cricket Club, Bal Sander, who's Managing Director of Hectic Lifestyles and the Kiba 2021 Entrepreneur of the Year and Manufacturer of the Year, Victoria Kopp Crawley, who's the Principal of Canterbury College, Jill Monk, the Managing Director and Founder of All Health Matters, Cress Wesling, who's the co-founder of Elvis and Cress and co-farmer New Barns Farm, and Dan Crooks, who's director of iFruits. Our final keynote speech is 5 in 5, 5 innovations that will change our lives within 5 years, delivered by Andrea Martin, IBM Distinguished Engineer, leader at the IBM Watson Center in Munich and IBM Client Center in the EMEA. So you can find out all about that by going to campusradio.co.uk/KBS-summit. campusradio.co.uk/KBS-summit.
There's a popular ice cream parlour and it's expanding after just 1 year in business.
It's in a toilet.
How lovely. I hope they've cleaned it and scrubbed it. The plans to move into a building that was once a public toilet. Are they going to call it Toulouse?
Yeah.
Sid's Ice Cream in Park Avenue Deal has proved a sweet treat haven for families since it opened last April. And having spotted the vacant building in the rope walk up the road in Sandwich, owners Claire Moore and Phil Sinden are now investing £8,000 into opening the second shop. The other one was previously at Potter's Bar, expected to be ready within 6 weeks and will create 3 new jobs. But then what happens if you're dog walking and need the loo?
Oh, there you go.
Will they keep a little side one, do you think?
Have an ice cream instead.
We'll have to ask them.
Yeah.
Because often when you're on a dog walk, a long one, you know, you can get caught short, can't you?
You have mentioned this a few times. It's obviously happened to you.
Yes, I've invested in a shiwi.
I was going to say, I thought you had a shiwi there.
Because the council closed all the toilets during lockdown when everybody was walking. I mean, what was that about?
To be fair, we never had many in the first place, did we?
I know.
I mean, public toilets in this country are a sadly lacking thing.
They are.
And the ones we have get vandalised, which is why they don't bother with them, which is a real shame. Anyway. How about this? The number of cars and lorries using the Channel Tunnel rocketed in March, primarily due to the suspension of P&O ferries. Boo. Comparing year-on-year figures, passenger traffic on Eurotunnel shuttle service was up a staggering 220%. This is due to the same period last year seeing cross-channel travel hit hard by travel restrictions due to the COVID crisis and deflating its numbers. The number of trucks it transported in March was 139,283. That's a 13% rise on last year. And passenger traffic stood at 122,319 versus 38,000 from the previous March. A spokesman for Getlink, the tunnel's parent company, explained it was driven by a favourable comparison basis and the shutdown of P&O ferries. It's something that people don't really realise as well. Back in the last 4 years, before we entered all this pandemic stuff, the port of Dover transported just over 300,000 trucks to the continent. Eurotunnel transported 1.4 million in the same period.
Wow.
So there's been a massive move away from the ferries, which is why things like P&O are going bust, really.
Apart from the pandemic when nobody was travelling, of course.
Which was the nail in the coffin.
Personally, I love a ferry. I love to get on and have a little drink and, you know, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, but the trouble is you can't keep a ferry company going.
Not me on my own.
You know, the rest of us like to go through the tunnel and that is borne out by what's happening.
Do you not get queues going through the tunnel? I've only been once through the tunnel. You don't get queues?
I can't say I've ever really had a big issue. Because one of the nice things with things like that is you rock up. It's all automated, isn't it? You know, it's all AMPR. So you drive through and it just goes, hello, Mr. Andrews, welcome to your, you know, do you want to go early? Okay, get on. And off you go.
All that stuff about the passport mandates and the vaccine mandates. My father-in-law has got a place in Monton. And he did all the paperwork and everything. And they never checked anything summer.
They don't. So, anyway, we've reached the end of another show.
Wow, where did that go?
Yeah, I know. We'll see you all next week. Thank you for joining us. Bye for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.